Hey, Aaron, have you ever seen The Color Purple?
Duh. Everyone's seen The Color Purple.
Oh, awesome. I just got it.
How did you get The Color Purple?
I just bought it.
Where?
At Walmart.
You got The Color Purple at Walmart?
Yeah, I just bought it.
How did you buy it?
Well, I walked in there and I said, give me The Color Purple on DVD.
Hold on, wait. What is? I don't know what you're talking about.
How can you buy
The Color Purple?
You can just buy it. You know the movie Color Purple?
Oh, I thought you meant the actual Color Purple. No, I've never seen that movie.
You haven't seen it?
You haven't seen it?
No way.
You're out of order.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fasten your seatbelts.
You're tearing me apart!
Houston, we have a problem.
What we've got here is failure.
Inconceivable.
God damn you all to hell!
Hello and welcome to...
You haven't seen it?
The movie podcast where I force my wife to watch films she doesn't care to see. I'm Joey, your host.
And I'm Aaron, the co-host. And I'm the wife that doesn't want to see these movies. Joey, what movie are we going to be talking about today?
Today we are going to be talking about the 1985 The Color Purple. It sounds weird to say the 1985 The Color Purple.
Is that like how people usually refer to movies?
I don't know. I just like saying the year that the movie came out, but it doesn't quite roll off the tongue when you say the 1985 The Color Purple.
You could add movie in between, maybe.
Yeah, I guess. Who cares? I already recorded it.
No, I know. I'm just saying. But the 1985?
Yeah, it came
1985
out.
Movie, The Color Purple.
I thought this movie came out when I was a little kid, but apparently I was 1 year old because I was born in 84. But I remember seeing this movie. I thought I was around 5 or 6. I didn't really understand what was going on. I knew that Oprah was in it, and I was like, Oprah's an actor?
Yeah. She actually did a pretty good job.
Oh, she did a fantastic job. She got nominated for an Academy Award for this movie.
Good job, Oprah.
Yeah. And I got kind of off track. I was going to say a little bit about the movie. It was directed by Steven Spielberg, and it was based on a novel by a writer named Alice Walker, who I'm not familiar with. One of the producers of the movie was Quincy Jones, who also did the soundtrack, which I never would have guessed that.
Is there any other movies that I may have heard him or like other songs that he's done?
I don't know. I don't know much about him. I'm sure we've heard many of his songs, but...
And Quincy Jones sounds familiar.
Yeah. Oh, also Rashida Jones.
Oh, okay.
That's her dad. But yeah, he's a legendary singer-songwriter. You know, tons of Grammys under his belt. But I just can't think of a single song.
He did Thriller.
Thriller? Huh.
And I'm bad. Come on.
He must have produced those.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway... The Color Purple stars Danny Glover, Whoopi Goldberg, Oprah Winfrey, Ray Don Chong. There's like a lot of actors in this movie who you'll recognize from other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Whenever the credits started rolling up, I asked you who Donald Glover was. And you're like, he's an actor. And I'm like, I know he's an actor. But his name sounded super familiar to me. But you were like, you probably won't know him because I asked you for like a film. And maybe it was just because you couldn't think of any right at that moment. But when I saw him, I was like, I know him. I have to see people's faces to recognize them.
Oh, yeah. He's been in a ton of stuff. I said he the thing that I know him from the most is the Lethal Weapon movies.
And I have never seen those.
Yeah, of course. You've never seen those. But he's been in tons of stuff. And I said you also might be getting him confused with Donald Glover just because they have the same last name. But you know Donald Glover, right?
It sounds familiar.
He was on he was Troy on Community. Troy and Abed in the morning.
oh, is he the Was he the black actor?
Yeah. A lot of people, when he was first starting to get popular, people were like, oh, he's Danny Glover's son. And he was like, no, I'm not. It was just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. But Ray Don
Chong. Well, Glover is a very common last name, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty common. It's not super common. But Ray Don Chong, here's another fun fact, is Tommy Chong's daughter. You know, the pothead guy who did the Cheech and Chong movies? Hey, man.
I had no idea.
Smoke some pot, man.
No idea.
Okay. Great. Great pull.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Aaron, what did you know about this movie before we got into it, before we watched it?
So, I did know a little bit about the movie. I knew that Oprah was in it. But what I most know it from is musical theater. So they made the movie into, well, the book and movie into a musical called The Color Purple. And originally it didn't like do the best. Like, I don't think it did badly. I can't remember. I need my slideshow. But like, I think it didn't do the best, but then the revival really brought it to life. And it's become really popular. There's one song that this woman sings in the show. It's the woman that plays Celie. It is a breathtaking song. And like, every time I hear it, I get chills. Wow. I'll have to play it for you.
Okay. Yeah. We'll listen to that. I can't imagine this movie as a musical though, because I just can't imagine people like stopping this narrative and like, I'm like Celie singing a song. Just, it doesn't sound
well,
right.
I think that's the biggest misconception people have about musicals, is that the music stops the plot or action. And I know that you know that.
No, that's not what I meant though.
I know that, you know, it doesn't mean that it stops it, but you said stop. So, but a lot of my students, whenever I talk about musicals, they're like, why do they just start bursting out in song? It doesn't make sense. And I tell them, like, have you ever had a bite of food and it's so good that you sing? Yes, you have.
I don't think I have.
Yes, you have. You've never been, that's, you're vocalizing your feelings.
Okay.
People, and this is the thing about musical theater, is when words aren't enough to express your feelings, you sing about it. And when singing isn't enough, you dance. That's the levels of theater, musical theater. And people laugh about it all the time. But like, when you get super excited, you dance. Like, I mean, maybe not you, because you're a little fuddy-duddy. But, but like people, like normal people, do that.
All right, if you insist.
Like, if you start dancing a little bit. Like, it's just how we express ourselves. And instead of just...
So you're saying it's primal.
Yeah.
To sing and dance.
Yes. Kids are singing and dancing. I used to make up the weirdest songs when I was younger. And I would dance around all the time just to feel like I could express myself. Because dance and singing is a form of expression.
Yeah, whatever. That shit's for nerds.
Well, then call me Urkel.
Well, then I guess I'm a big old nerd. Yeah, no, I understand. I'm making fun of you a little bit. But I was thinking, when I was watching this movie, I was like, you know what makes movies good? Two things. Tension and suspense.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie has a lot of tension.
It is a lot of tension. Like, and suspense. I stopped writing notes literally like 15 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long movie too. So like, the movie, I mean, it takes place over her whole life. Well, most of her life, because it's from 14 until she's
I think
in
it was,
her 50s.
It's 4 years. It's from like 1909 to 1949.
Yeah, it's 40 roughly. Years, but she starts out at 14.
Yeah.
So she's in her 50s by the end of the movie.
Right, yeah. But she doesn't look super old.
No, she doesn't.
No, and the way they age everybody up.
They
in the
aged
movie.
Oprah a lot more than any other character.
Well, yeah, because she went to jail for a little while, and then
I get that,
but yeah, you're right, they did. But anyway, like I was gonna say, the age progression looked really good
the way they slowly
age people
and
up.
The actress that the first actress, the younger actress that got that played Celie, there was some really good characteristics, like facial features that resemble Whoopi, which I thought was really great. Like, I think they're, I got to look back at their faces, but they were just like, something about their mouths was very similar.
Right.
Especially cause like, that's like a through line through the movie is that everyone tells her she has an ugly smile and then,
yeah. And she doesn't smile.
Yeah. She hides her smile. She hides her mouth because people have always told her she has ugly teeth and she's got an ugly smile and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, I usually ask you if you think you knew what the movie was about, but I think you kind of got that right away.
Yeah. I mean, if I were to try from the 10 minutes in, I think I would have said that by the end of the movie, she just, I wouldn't say that she like, I didn't expect Donald Glover to kind of have a change of heart. I just thought she was just going to get out and that'd be it.
Yeah. I didn't see that coming at all.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, it's about her struggle in life. And especially being a woman and black in that time period, like was one of the biggest struggles. A lot of people compare black men to white women because they have one advantage. So like black men have being a man as their advantage.
Right.
And white women have being white as the advantage. But black women have none of it.
Right.
So it puts them at the very bottom of the hierarchy of like our society, especially then. And so, like constantly they're always telling her like, oh, you're a black woman and you're nothing and all of this other things like that. Which I mean, that's how people actually treated women that day, in that time. And people still even treat women like that now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's what I kind of wanted to talk about. And I wanted to get your feelings on that. Cause watching this movie, whenever we watch a movie, I always say like, these are the characters I related to. This is where my life experience intersects with these. And watching this movie, there was nobody. Because thank God I'm not a Danny Glover. And I'm sure as shit not a black woman in the you know, the early 20th century. So I really had difficulty identifying with the characters outside of just basic human emotions.
Mm.
Like I can understand what it must feel like to be trapped. But not like that. I'll never know what it's like to be married to a man because my parents wanted me to be married to that person.
They're forcing you to.
Yeah, they are legally. And also, I wanted to say this still happens to this very day.
Yeah.
Like we are the parents of a daughter. We could marry her off to a grown man right now and it would be perfectly legal.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah. So, did you think about that at all?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Whenever she was 14 years old, I thought about my brother and my cousin. They're both 14, 15. Oh, I think, well, my brother's 16 now. She might even be 16. But just thinking about when, I mean, I kind of call her my sister. She's my cousin, but she, like, my parents took her in.
She's kind of legally bound to your family now,
I guess.
Because it's your dad's side of the family, there is some mm-hmm. blood relation too.
Oh, right? There is blood relation. Like okay. Him, my dad and her are cousins. So she's not even my first cousin. She's my dad's cousin. And he's taking care of her, because his mom and her dad were brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
She is blood. She is my cousin, but they also kind of adopted her after her dad passed away. But like when she first moved in, she was 14. And to think being pregnant and having two, like not, that wasn't even her first baby.
Yeah, that was her second baby.
Her second child. So she must have been 13 when she had the first one, mm-hmm. which is insane.
Yeah, could have been a little bit younger.
Yeah.
But I guess
they never specify how old the older son is.
Yeah. But it is. I really like the way they revealed it too. They're in those the tall field with the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see their shoulders and up. And you can, they right away, they set up that these two sisters are very close and they really love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then they walk out of the field and she's pregnant. And it's like, it's a real WTF. Yeah.
Literally, moment. Whenever I saw she was pregnant, I was like, wait, how old is she?
Yeah, I was like, no, because from the thing, I'm like, oh, these are obviously children.
Yes,
pretty
exactly.
Pretty young children. Uh-huh. And then she walks out and she's pregnant. And, it's
and
like,
not even like a little pregnant. Like, she is like about to burst.
Yeah. And it's like, goddamn. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, it's very off-putting and upsetting.
And then, pretty soon after that, you find out that her father is the child's father.
Yes.
And so she was saying like, oh, my baby's my sister.
Yeah.
Because she thought that her father was the one that she thought that her, the man that had, done this to her was her actual father.
Yeah.
When in turn he wasn't.
Yeah. We find out at the end of the movie, that it wasn't her biological father. It was her stepfather. Who they never, I guess they just never told her and her sister that that was their stepfather.
Later on in the letters, that's what Nettie tells her. Like, Nettie tells her that that's not actually her father.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, when they were kids,
yeah,
the mother didn't say, hey, this isn't your real father. This is just your stepfather. And then also, I was like, what, when at the beginning scared the shit out of me because I was like, what is he going to do with that baby? Were you thinking that too?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I wasn't surprised that he took it away because he said that if her mom found out, she would die, which she later did find out and passed away.
Right.
But I think they were just doing that to manipulate her. But I think he was wanting to sell it so that he can at least get some money back.
Yeah, well, I was just like, well, if he's willing to rape his own daughter, then he might be willing to kill a baby, so I don't know. But I
think
scared.
He was more concerned about making money.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. What are you trying to do? ASMR in here?
Sorry. I'm having an alcoholic beverage.
Yeah. One she made yourself. You're yeah. A real mixologist over here.
And I don't drink very often, so I just wanted to treat myself.
Yeah, she's going to be real loose.
Yeah, so do we want to get into the plot? I mean, we kind of started to.
But I don't really want it. This movie is long, guys.
It is a long movie.
This movie is over 2 hours. I have trouble sitting through a 90-minute movie.
Well, we did cut it in half. Like, so we watched the first half yesterday and then finished it today, which I think that's fine. Like,
no, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it was like the last 30 minutes we saved for today, but it's a long one, so we're not going to go scene by scene like we normally do. I just kind of want to talk about different scenes of the movie. In the beginning, was there anything else that jumped out at you?
Well, whenever she, like, so Donald Glover's character, she just calls him Master the whole time because that's what he wants her to call him. And his kids even call him that. But his name is actually Albert.
They call him Mister.
Master. Mister?
No, Mister. Yeah, like Mister.
Oh,
T.
Okay. I thought they said Master. Yeah. Maybe I was reading it wrong. So, okay. Yeah, I guess Mister.
Yeah, but his real name is Albert.
But he wanted Nettie. And Nettie was super scared of him, which I totally get.
Yeah, they both were.
And he went to go get Nettie to be his wife. He went to their house to get Nettie to be his wife, but her dad didn't want that.
Yeah, which I don't know
why. I'm wondering, we know that Celie's not his daughter, but is Nettie his daughter?
I don't think so. I think they were both his stepdaughter.
Maybe he like told her that later before he died or before she ran away.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, for some reason he doesn't want her to have Nettie and tries to, maybe
he wants her. That's what I think.
Oh, maybe he just wanted to get rid of Celie too.
Well, yeah, definitely. But he was like, you'll never have Nettie, and like yelled all this stuff about it. But I think it was because he wanted her.
Okay, maybe that's it. Because he was raping her too.
Like, well, it sounded like he was trying to, but it didn't actually happen.
Maybe.
Because when she moved in with him, she was like, he kept trying. He kept saying I was beautiful and all this other stuff. But
she said he couldn't keep his hands off her. He wouldn't quit touching her.
Yeah, but he may have forced himself on her.
Yeah, we don't know. They're vague about that, but he definitely was
trying to groom her at least.
Abusing her and assaulting her for sure.
Definitely. And then the reason I think I thought he wasn't touching, like he wasn't she wasn't allowing him to, was because of how much she fought back when Danny Glover tried to.
Right.
Like she literally hit him with her books because she was on her way to school and he's chasing her. And he pulls her into the woods, and then you hear something like her book slam into him.
Yeah, well, he obviously hit him in the balls with her books.
Yeah.
Because he's like grabbing his crotch when he comes out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Glover was really good in this movie, but it was a little bit hard for me. Maybe it's just me, because I know him from the Lethal Weapon movies and the other things that he's done. As he's usually plays a nice guy. He usually plays... like the hero of the movie or one of them. So it was like, I'm like, I can't really buy him as being abusive. Did you like fully buy him as this really abusive man? You did?
Yeah.
So maybe it's just me.
Probably.
Yeah. But he, another really great performance. This movie is full of great performances and he was good.
Oh yeah.
But I didn't fully buy him as that. And I think it's just my history with him. Yeah, so Celie moves with him, and he's got a bunch of kids who are just running wild. He doesn't take care of his family. He doesn't really seem to do anything. I don't even know what he does for work.
Well, there was one point in the movie where his dad said, like, you haven't been working the fields. So I'm guessing he was like...
Yeah, he's a farmer, but he seems like he has, like, a fair amount of money. He's got a pretty big house. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. And there's sunflower. Maybe he's a sunflower seed farmer or something like that.
Maybe.
Because there's always sunflowers everywhere. But anyway, his kids are all running wild. He's got a bunch of them. He's a widower. And as soon as they get to his house, he just puts Celie to work.
Yeah. He puts her to work and then he just, I mean, pretty much rapes her.
Yeah, he rapes her all the time. And he hits her, and he just makes her take care of his kids and clean the house and cook. But he's not in love with her. She's essentially the maid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I don't think he could love her.
No.
Because he was too obsessed with Suge Avery.
Yeah, that was his mistress. But I don't understand why if he was so taken with Nettie and then he buys or not buys, but.
Well, I mean.
Is she.
He compromises.
Yeah. But he's like, I want to take your child. But why would he take the one that he doesn't even like?
What do you mean?
He wanted Nettie, but he got.
See, her dad wouldn't let him.
Yeah, I know he wouldn't let her have Nellie, but why would he just say, okay, well, I guess I'll take the other one that I don't want.
I don't know. Well, I guess he was probably like, well, at least someone will be cleaning my house.
Okay. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm taking care of my kids.
Right. And then they set up, there's an important thing that they set up with he makes her shave him with a straight razor.
Yeah.
And
it happens twice in the movie.
Three times.
Three?
Yeah,
I only remember twice.
Okay, I could be wrong too. But they set that up, that he makes her shave her, and like she's really nervous about it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's yelling at her. And then the mail comes, and we find out that Danny Glover also really likes to receive mail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, before this though, he like I think one of the biggest things is the letters in this movie, and that Danny Glover is keeping Nettie's letters away from her.
Right.
So whenever Celie first moves in with Danny Glover's character, she doesn't know how to read. And her sister, I guess being pretty, gets to go to school.
Yeah, or maybe she stayed with their stepfather long enough that he sent her to school for a little bit.
Maybe. But I mean,
but they also say that Celie knows how to read a little bit, but not very well, not well enough.
Well, she says that she was going to teach her. So her sister Nettie moves in with her because her dad keeps trying to touch her. And she teaches her how to read because she says, well, when we grow up, we'll always be able to write to each other.
Right.
So she teaches her how to read. And then whenever he's shaving, she hears the mail before he does. And she's like, oh, maybe this is the first letter. Because he had kicked her out recently, mm-hmm. Just before she was shaving him.
Yeah. She after she had resisted his assault,
mm-hmm.
then he kicked her out.
Yeah. And so, but the biggest thing about that is like she is waiting on a letter, and so is he. She's waiting on letters from Nettie, and he's waiting on letters from Suge so that he can go to like to see about concerts and things right. like that, because she's a singer,
yeah,
and a performer. But he's taking all of the mail and he's not allowing her to see. And she asks, oh, is there anything for me? You don't have any mail. Like, this mail's all for me. Like, get out of it. Get out of my business and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they sort of set up that she'll never be able to get to the mail before he does because yeah. he hovers over it.
Well, he also says to her, like, don't go picking through the mail because I've rigged my, my mailbox to tell me if anybody's tampered with it.
Yeah, but I'm just getting at like the fact that she's trapped in this situation where she'll never be able to get the mail.
Yeah.
And he's obviously not going to give her anything that's for her. He's just going to hide it from her.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, and they also, you know, they came up with a reason why he's always checks the mail. It's because he's looking for letters from his mistress.
Yeah.
And so after Nettie's kicked out, there's some age progression and some of Danny Glover's kids are grown up, including what was his name?
Harpo.
I think it's Harpo. Like the, whatchamacallit brother. Oh, well, I don't have the cast up, but anyway, Harpo or Harbo, he grows up and he starts seeing a young woman called Sophia, played by Oprah, and they're going over to to Danny Glover's house
mm-hmm.
so that Danny Glover can meet her.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like her. And you can probably figure out why, is because she's kind of a strong-headed woman. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really take crap. And mm-hmm. they say that, I don't know why it's really important to tell people that she's overweight, but that is part of it.
Well, maybe that's just because Harbo is infatuated with her.
Yeah.
Like he loves her so much. And so, I think Celie makes a comment about her being fat is like she's fat and people love her. Like, why can't I be ugly and people love me?
Oh, okay.
Because right. I think like she sees pretty people and how people can love pretty people. Like even whenever she sees her baby in town, the woman's beautiful. And so I think she sees she gets to have this nice life because she's pretty.
Right.
But whenever she sees Sophia and she's like, but she's fat. Like, maybe, like, this doesn't make sense. I don't think it made sense to her.
Well, maybe he knew that she would be an award-winning TV host one day.
Maybe. And maybe she could get him a car. And you a car. And you a car.
Oprah Winfrey, when she got this role, she was in some sort of health camp to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then she found out that the character is supposed to be overweight. So she's like, well, I guess I can leave this camp.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I read about that today. But yeah, the Sophia character is a really good character, and so is, man, I wish I had the cast up, but Harpo Willard E. Pug, or Pugue, probably Pugue, Harpo Johnson. See, I was right, Harpo. Like the Marx brother,
Harpo. I could have swore that it was a B. Maybe I'm dyslexic.
No, don't worry about it. It's fine. did I tell you when I would be in a, like, Muslim countries or Persian countries or whatever, and they would see my name Lamb and be like, oh, it's a P instead mm-hmm. of a B? So I would get things back and it would say Lamp
mm-hmm.
instead of my last name.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know why that's important now. This guy, Willard E. Pugue, he was in RoboCop 2 as the mayor. And he sort of played the exact same character because he was kind of high strung mm-hmm. in this. He played a high strung mayor in RoboCop 2. And because he was all put upon, because he's trying to be a good mayor in Detroit, and but you've got this evil corporation controlling the cops.
Mm-hmm.
Our daughter's screaming, scream singing in the back room.
I don't know what she's doing.
I don't know. She's been making up a lot of songs lately, so.
I told you it's expression.
Yeah, Aaron, I was giving you garbage earlier. But Sophia is a strong woman, and she gives Harpo a lot of grief, and because she thinks he doesn't help out enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then one day, he's like, I don't know what to do about her. And Celie, drawing on all of her experience of being abused, she says, you need to beat her.
Yes.
Because she's not falling in line. You're the man. She needs to be listening to you. And
I think it's because that's how she's always been forced.
That's what she thinks an ugly woman's role in yes. the relationship is. Right? So he does it. And this does not go well for him because we find out that Sophia has got a mean right hook.
Mm-hmm.
Which, remember, because it comes back later in the movie. It's very important later on.
Yeah. But the Harris thing, what I was trying to say was, so the person that plays the dad, his name in the movie is Pa Harris. And then Nettie's last name is Harris. And Celie's, young Celie's name is Harris. But Whoopi's character is Celie Johnson.
Oh, okay.
But so, they never... Oh, they specify Harpo Johnson. Never mind. I was going to say maybe they
have... Oh, yeah. She's Celie Johnson because she's married to
Mr. Albert Johnson.
Yeah, Albert Johnson.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I was going to say, like, maybe. Maybe they're not related.
They are blood... They're blood sisters, though.
Yes, because they're moms. But I was saying maybe that he was her dad.
I don't think so.
But he might not...
He could be, but I don't think so. Because their ages would be too far apart. They're very close in age.
But she's it like, if Whoopi knew her, like Whoopi had to have been very young to not realize that that wasn't her dad.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, it would have happened when she was young.
I mean, it could have, but I don't think, I think they're blood sisters and that is their stepfather for both of them.
Cool. We'll never know.
Well, we could talk to the person who wrote the novel.
Yeah, maybe.
They're dead. Oh. I'm just kidding. They're not dead.
Why would you say that?
Because
you're a bad person.
Yes, because I'm a bad person. I tricked you. I'm such a bad person.
Who did write the book?
Let me see. Alice Walker.
I wonder when she was born.
She's like 90 now or something. She's pretty up there in age. Oh, 90. She's 79 now.
So she was born in 62.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering if like, she got these, stories from like her relatives who may have gone through similar things like this.
Oh yeah, definitely could have.
Something else that we were talking about is like how we kind of connect to it and, I would say like, I was really close to my grandma, but like my grandma wasn't born until, until the 20s. So like halfway through the movie is when my grandma would have been born.
Yeah, I think this is definitely took place before anybody we knew.
Yeah.
like.
Yeah, because yeah, I didn't know my great grandparent.
Yeah, neither did I. Or no, I knew one of them, but he was too demented and senile to really talk about it by then. But anyway, they wouldn't have lived through the same thing because they were white. So.
Yeah, but my mom probably, I mean, my mom was born in 62. So she probably has heard of what it was like from her grandma about, because I mean, my grandma was born, my great grandma was born in like, I think, the 1918 or so, maybe 1890. Mm-hmm. But she was pretty young when she had my grandma. I think it was in the 1900s still. So.
Okay, so then at that point, that's when Sophia then confronts Seely and says, like, did you tell him to hit me?
Yeah, so after Harpo hits her, so she comes up in the sunflower field with a black eye, or not even a black eye, just like a little bruise under her eye. And she goes up to Seely and she says, did you tell him to hit me? And then you see Harpo and he's like, oh, I got hit by a mule. And he has this huge black eye. So you can tell that Sophia really took care of herself in that situation.
Yeah. It's funny too. It's like that classic saying, like, when you got in a fight and someone's like, what happened to you? And you say, you should see the other guy.
Yeah.
Harpo was the other guy.
But also, that also reminds me of when they actually get married. So Sophia and Harpo, when they get married, after, like, before they can even kiss, cause he's like, oh, I get to kiss her. Her family pulls her away and is like, oh my gosh, that's so exciting. And then, Albert was about to go, give her a handshake or something, and her family, all of the women, stood in front of him and like prevented him from interacting with her. And then he walks away, and then they're like, ah, let's talk more.
Yeah, I think they know what family he's from, because if you look over at his side of the church, there's nobody sitting there.
Yeah,
so I think they knew who she was marrying. Mm-hmm. But I guess back then, you probably just don't have that many marriage prospects.
Yeah.
So then I think we kind of cut to when Mr. and Harpo bring home Shug Avery. Like, we see, there is a point where we see Danny Glover going to see one of the shows, and he's all excited and getting dressed up.
Mm-hmm. And she's helping him get dressed.
Yeah. And he doesn't even seem to care that she knows that he knows he's going to go have sex with this woman.
Yeah. Well, she seems super excited about it. Like, oh yes, he's not going to beat me tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably what she is thinking. And that he's just going to be gone completely.
Yeah.
So she can do what she wants. But he's very excited, and then she ends up coming home with them. And when she first came, I was like, "Oh, she's just wasted." Turns out she's sick. She was sick, and like back then, of course, they didn't have antibiotics, and they had vaccines already. But so you can be sick with an infection for months.
Yeah. But she's staying there, and Albert's trying to. This is the first time. Seely actually hears his name, because she starts calling him Albert, and she's like, I just call him Mister, because that's all I know him as. His kids don't even call him they call him Mister, which is so weird.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, Ma, Pa. Like, she even calls her stepdad Pa.
You know Mr. T, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know how he came up with his name?
No.
Well, he, I guess this must have been in the 60s or 70s. And like, people looked down on black men and thought of them as boys and treated them as boys.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I'm going to create this character, and my name is going to be Mr. T, so that when people address me it's already like, yeah, I'm an adult man. I'm Mr. T. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
That's really smart and clever.
Uh-huh. Too bad he wasn't in this movie. That would have been really good.
Mr. T.
That'd be funny if he was like, he was the one who trained Sophia. Now, Miss Sophia, you got to throw out that right hook. And you got to say, I pity the fool.
Oh, my God.
You don't like that? You don't think that would be good?
No. I don't.
Okay. So, anyways, Celie is taking care of Shug.
Yeah, she's taking care of her. Well, because Albert can't. And that's one thing that Shug keeps saying is, like, he's like a worthless man. His dad didn't raise him good enough, and he's not a good person. So even Shug, who sleeps with him, doesn't knows that he's not a good person.
Right.
And sorry, our daughter's sound barking. lots of distractions today.
Well, yeah, too many.
What was I saying?
I don't remember. Something about Mr. T teaching Sophia how to box?
No.
That was you that said that, right?
No, you said that. You horrible person.
I'm terrible?
A little bit.
For doing a Mr. T impression? But anyway, Celie is taking care of.
Celie's taking care of her. And Albert's trying to, like, cook for her, and he doesn't know how to use anything. And I love that she just sits down and watches him and starts giggling at him.
Yeah.
Like, he's so helpless.
Yeah, my favorite part is when he grabs the kerosene.
Yes.
And right before he pours it in, it flashes over to the rocking chair that she's been sitting in.
Mm-hmm. And she's not in there anymore.
She's not in it anymore because she knows it's about to blow.
Yeah. But so she goes up and she takes care of her and nurses her back to health. And then they start building up Harpo's house again.
No, they start building a juke joint.
Yeah, but it was Harpo's house, but then now they're building it as.
Oh, right. Yes. It was his house. Yeah.
But,
and Lawrence Fishburne shows up, and I was like, great, Lawrence Fishburne's in this. And then he's barely in the rest of the movie.
Who's Lawrence Fishburne?
He's, Morpheus from, Morpheus and the Matrix. Here.
Oh, okay. He looks familiar.
Yeah, I really like Lawrence Fishburne, and when he showed up in the movie, I was like, oh, this is great. You're going to get some Larry Fish time, and we didn't. He wasn't really in it. But also, like, when he first shows up, his costume is kind of like a little 1970s, because he's got kind of like a puffy hat that's to the side and, like, a vest.
I don't
know. And you see him and you go, oh, this guy's a musician or something. Mm-hmm. Which I think he played the piano or something. But
oh, okay.
I wanted to see more of him, but we didn't get that much Larry Fishburne.
But after they turned it into this bar, Celie starts performing there. And there's one night where
you mean Shug starts.
That's performing. What I meant. Shug starts performing there, and Celie goes one night, and everyone's making fun of her because she's ugly. People keep saying she's ugly. Whoopi looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
She looks gorgeous.
Yeah. But that's why they keep saying it in the movie. So you keep remembering, as, oh, right, she's ugly.
Yeah, she's supposed to be ugly.
But Whoopi Goldberg's not ugly.
Yeah, she's not. But people keep saying that. And then Suge's like, oh, I wrote this song and I'm dedicating it to Celie because she nursed me back to health. And then there was these girls that were, like, laughing at her and everything. And I love how she, like, turns to them and sticks her tongue out at them.
Yeah, just very briefly.
Yeah. That was a cute little moment.
Yeah, I really liked it. And then is that the same time, again, Sophia shows up and starts problems? Or is that it? No, because she had already left him.
Yeah, she had.
She shows up at the bar with her new man.
Yeah.
Right? And then a fight breaks out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny, man. Like, it was Ray Don Chong and her start getting into it a little bit. And then they're squaring up to each other. And, like, some of the musicians are like, oh, I'm packing my stuff up.
Yeah, I love. There was this one person that was playing the guitar, and he put it in his case in the, I don't know what the top part of the guitar is called, where the little spinny things are.
Uh-huh. I think it's just the head.
Okay. That was out of the case. He was like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, he doesn't fully get it inside. He's like, I gotta roll, man. And then she punches with her mean right hook. She punches Radon Chong and she falls through a hole in the ground. And I was like, why was that trap door just open like that?
I think it was, who else fell out of that?
I don't remember anybody else falling out. Mm. But a whole fight breaks out in this place. And somebody gets Celie out.
Oh, Suge does. Suge brings her back to the house where she dresses her up. And she's like, I'm going to leave.
Oh, that's right. And that's when she says, like, I'll never get married. But if I did, I'd probably marry somebody like Albert.
I don't think she says that.
Yeah.
But she's saying, I don't want someone like Albert because he's not a good man. Like, she's like, I want
a good man. She says that he's not a good man, but she also says, if I did get married, I'd probably end up with somebody like Albert.
I don't recall that.
Yeah. And she also says, like, when they have sex, it's nice. And
yeah, I think she it's likes like, having oh. sex.
So I thought she was saying, like, I'd probably marry him just because the sex is good. That's kind of what I got from that.
Oh. Oh. I don't.
She's also saying, like, this is, look, I know who I am, and this is a downfall in my character, in my own character.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then they have an exchange. I don't remember what she says, but the whole point of that
scene, well, she's trying to get her to smile. Because like they're like playing around and she's like, why do you keep hiding your smile? And then Celie says something to the effect of like, you even think I'm ugly. You, when you first came in, you said, sure is ugly.
Oh, that's what I was trying to think of. Yeah.
But she's like, I don't think you're ugly. I think you're beautiful. And then they kiss several times.
Right. And then we see Whoopi Goldberg smile for the first time. Like fully
smiling. Fully smiling.
And she's got a big old smile. Mm-hmm. It was nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what happens after that. She leaves shortly after that.
Yeah. They bring her stuff. And she's like, I'm going to come with her.
Oh, that's right.
She like starts packing her bag. She like tries to pack her knitting.
Uh-huh.
So she got something to do.
Right, yeah.
on the trip.
Yeah, she's trying to go real fast so Danny Glover won't find her.
Yeah, but he walks in when she's like packing stuff and he's like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, nothing. And she can't think of anything.
Right.
She's not a good liar.
No.
She says nothing and then she goes and they take her to, she has all of their bags. I think Danny has like two maybe, but she has like three, four bags, carrying them to go drop Suge off at the car.
Right.
And she like walks up and Suge goes, what, Miss Celie? Like, what do you want? Like, what do you want to say? And she just goes, I'm going to miss you or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because she was too scared. And you could tell because she kept looking back at Mr.
And he was watching her real close, too. Because he knows something's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, they're in their town, I guess, like downtown, wherever they are. And the mayor is around, and there's a white mayor and his white wife. And they're, like, accosting people. And the wife starts pinching kids' cheeks.
She's like, I love these colored kids.
Yeah.
And all of this other stuff.
Yeah,
and
very, very much tokenizing them.
Yeah.
And it turns out those are Sophia's kids.
Yeah. And they go run up to her mom and she was like, I would love for you to come work. How would you like to be my maid? And then...
When she said that, did she mean Sophia's kids?
No, her.
Okay, because I thought she was saying that to the kids. Like, do you want to grow up and be my maid?
No, she was saying that to Sophia.
Okay.
So she says, like, Sophia says, hell no, and she keeps repeating it. And then the mayor comes up, and then she punches the mayor, and they take her to jail. But then after that, like, when she's in the car with the mayor's wife, it says she didn't want to be the mayor's wife's maid. But after jail, she had turned out being, that's exactly what she was.
Right.
Because after she was in, I think they were trying to play at, after jail, like they were like, these are your options. You can either be my maid or you can stay in jail.
Right.
And so she's like, I guess I'll do that.
Yeah, that's what I think it was. They told her, it was like, look, if you don't go be this woman's maid, then it's just going to be a lot worse for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's a part in the market where she sees Celie, but I can't really remember what the exchange was. Yeah. Do you remember?
She walks into the market. Well, they're going grocery shopping. It's right after she gets that car. The mayor's wife gets the car, and she's teaching her how to drive. And then she's like, we got to go to the market. And so they walk in, and she just gives her the list, and the mayor's wife starts walking around. And then,
oh yeah, she's chatting with the clerk.
Yeah.
And I remember her saying something about like rings on Saturn, or
I don't know.
She says Mars the red planet.
Do you think it's really red? but she gives Sophia the list, and then Sophia's looks like she's having a hard time reading it because her eye is swollen.
Right.
And then you see Celie come up to her, like grab the list and start packing all of that stuff up so that right. she doesn't have to.
Yeah.
You can just see that like Celie is this, like has this beautiful heart.
Yes. Yeah,
and you've seen it since the beginning, but like you can really see it like once she gets a little bit older and because she loves Sophia.
Yeah.
Like, she
also feels bad for telling Harpo to beat her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great moment. Damn, I totally lost my train of thought. Oh, and they show passage of time through this. The mayor's wife decides to be nice, quote unquote nice, and says, oh, I'll let you see your family on Christmas. You haven't seen your family in a long time. And she says 8 years.
Yeah, it's been 8 years since I've seen my kids. Yeah,
so that shows a lot of passage of time. Because this movie moves, just takes big jumps in time. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was an interesting plot device. So she's like, I know how to drive now, so I'll take you to see your family.
And I'll drive myself back.
And she'll drive herself back. And so she does. And what was interesting to me is like when Sophia gets there, like everyone's really happy to see her, and they call her Miss Sophia.
Yeah.
They show her a lot of respect, and they're like, how are you? How are you doing? It's so good to see you. And then the mayor's wife doesn't know how to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody goes out there to help her.
And she's saying that all these men are attacking her when they're trying to just help her out.
Yeah, because she keeps driving into stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't get into gear. And so she freaks out, and then Sophia has to leave after seeing her family for maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think though my favorite part of this movie was when she finally stands up to Mister, when Celie finally stands up and is like, I'm leaving. Well, cuz we skipped over some stuff, but like
We're going to be skipping over a lot of stuff. This movie is just too long, too many scenes for us to go beat by beat.
Yeah. Shook finally gets married, and then she brings him to their house to stay with them for a little bit. And I think that's when they find the letters.
Yeah.
That was another big moment. I was like, when they find those letters, Shook helped her find them.
Well, you're skipping over something that I wanted to talk about though. When Shook shows up, I mean, it's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And she's married, and she said she wouldn't get married,
mm-hmm.
right? She never would. So she has changed a lot in the time
that
she's been away. And that's an interesting
way. I think Celie changed her.
Maybe. But when they show up, like, Danny Glover and Whoopi Goldberg both go out to the porch, and they're, like, stunned to see that she's married. And it's funny because they're both madly in love with her.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, oh no. They don't really know what to think or what to do. And then Whoopi Goldberg is like, oh, we've got a cold. And then she nudges Danny Glover. He's like, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is like a very strange moment to kind of illustrate that these two are trauma bonded at this point, because they've been married for a long time, and he's been abusing her the whole time, but they're still like a unit at some points. It's kind of a weird thing that I wanted to bring up.
Mm-hmm. But she, so after, after a little bit, Celie, I don't know what causes them to start looking for the letters, but Celie,
Shug finds one in the mail.
Oh, so she's allowed to touch the mail.
No, well, she had to sneak down there and get it because, her husband, she told her husband, like, go get drunk with Danny Glover. And while you guys are screwing around, I'm going to get the mail. Maybe. Because remember how they were like goofing off and putting egg on each other for reason?
Well, whenever she already found one of the letters when they got drunk. Because when they got drunk and then went out to the field, that's when they started looking for the box of letters.
Well, they went to the juke joint. And that's when they looked for the letters.
Yeah. But they were already drunk.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, I don't know how she thought to look for the letters.
I don't either. I don't think they showed it. Hmm. It's just they knew that they had to be around there somewhere because she wouldn't have, Nettie wouldn't still be writing.
So she goes to the mailbox and finds a letter.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. But I wonder what caused her to go check the mail.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Celie told her at some point.
Mm.
I don't know. Or maybe it was just happenstance.
Maybe.
What do they call that? That's what I was saying. Deus ex machina moment?
But what I was saying was, I bet Glover allows Shug to check the mail for him.
Maybe, yeah.
Because I think he's like, oh, well, I mean, it's just her. Like, I don't have to worry about her. I'm worried about Celie finding that letter, not her. But Shug finds it and she sees it's for Celie and gives it to her. Maybe he's forgotten that she writes sometimes.
I think that she just saw the mailman and just went and got it.
Maybe.
I think it was just a coincidence.
But she finds the letter, gives it to her, and then they get Grady and her husband and Mister. They go, they get drunk, and then they start to go to the juke joint. And then they start digging around the house for the letters, and they find some of the letters. And like, there's just like a long progression of her just reading all of these letters.
And hiding, reading it. She has to go to church and pretend like she's looking at a Bible.
Yeah. She opens up books and pretends to read them, but she's actually reading the letters. She's doing lots of things. There's one point where she's reading a book and she's reading the letter and he smacks it out of her hand and he goes, shave me.
No, he slaps her in the face and she just drops the book, I think.
Okay.
But and it doesn't matter. Anyway, that's the point at which he says, shave me, and then you think like, oh, she's going to do something now.
And yeah, and then also, for some reason, Shug realizes that's going to happen too. I don't know what causes her to be like, oh, yep.
I don't either. she must be clairvoyant.
Maybe. But she like gets up and starts running towards the house to prevent her from killing Mister. Because they know that it'll be worse for her if she does that.
Right.
Because she'll be going to jail.
Mm-hmm. But at this point, she doesn't seem to care because, you know, being in jail would not be any worse than having to be. Yeah. And being in real prison or real jail probably wouldn't be any worse than having to live with this man.
Yeah.
So she's pretty, the movie is saying like she is fully fed up now.
Mm-hmm.
And I, at this point in the movie, this was kind of like, I think this sort of signified the third act of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this movie doesn't have very clear act structure, but I definitely think that was the third act moment. It's like, this is where she is going to start taking control of her own life.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see her liberate herself or die trying.
Yeah. After that, they are at dinner, and this is when Celie says, Shug says that, oh, we're leaving. And then Celie says, and I'm leaving with them. And like, this is the final, for the first time she's actually been able to stand up for herself.
Yeah.
In the whole movie, which the song that I want to play for you in a little bit is from this moment.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I haven't seen the musical.
You're going to play that on the show?
I wanted to.
Well, then play it right now.
Oh, okay.
How dare you play music on a show? This is from the musical. What version of?
This is the revival. So also in the revival, there, Jennifer Hudson is in it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. This is the end.
I can feel her now. She may not be here, but she's still mine. I know she still loves me.
Okay, I think you better stop playing. I don't know how far we can go into that and it still be fair use.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to play this one part for you.
Okay. We've played songs on the show before and I got real nervous about it. I was like, you played a lot of them. That sounds really good. I would love to see that show.
Oh yeah, me too. If it ever like toured, I would totally want to go see that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this is definitely the most famous scene from the movie.
Yeah.
It's just called the table scene. That's how people refer to it online. It's like the dinner table scene or the table scene. Because Whoopi Goldberg has like gives a performance of her life right there, and it's such an incredible juxtaposition to this very meek character she's been playing the whole movie. It's extremely powerful. And Oprah also gives a really great performance. And she comes this close to just putting a knife in Danny Glover's neck. And the people have to stop her. And she's like, nothing's going to be good for you until you do right by me. And she says she's going to leave and go to Memphis with Suge. And she does.
Yeah.
And Danny Glover knows there's nothing he can do about it. And the rest of the people at the table are even supporting her and are behind her.
Especially like Sophia, she's been kind of down because of everything that's happened to her. And then when she actually stands up for herself, like Suge starts eating again. And like, because like she's been sitting at the table and she's not eating any food.
Right.
She's not putting anything on her plate. She's like,
she's very depressed.
Yeah. And then this happens and she's like, woo, let's have, give me them peas.
Yeah. She's like, Miss Sophia's back. I'm back home with my family and all that. Yeah. It was a really great moment and it hits you real hard, this scene. And I really liked it. So then she leaves and, then we find out, Suge reunites with her father.
Yeah. I thought you were saying Sophia and Harpo get back together.
Yeah, they do, because I guess Harpo has figured out that what he did was not wrong. Right. Yeah. So also Suge, we've seen her throughout the movie go to the church and try to speak to the pastor, but the pastor won't speak to her.
Yeah.
So finally at the end of the movie, she's singing at the juke joint and she decides to walk over to the church while singing and everybody follows her. And she starts singing about Jesus.
Well, yeah, it's the same song that they're singing at the church.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But anyway, she goes in there and confronts.
She is clairvoyant. That's the only way that that makes sense.
See? I just have such good intuition about things.
But you earlier in the movie, you find out that she was that she had two kids and that they were living with her parents because she couldn't take care of them.
Right.
I
don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. Because Celie, whenever she's in the tub, she goes, "Do you have any kids?" And she goes, "Yeah, I got two. And they're with my mom and dad." But it doesn't say that the pastor is her father. So whenever that scene happened where she goes to meet with the pastor, I was like, who is he to her? Like, I asked you who he was and you said, he's the reverend. And I said, I know that, but who is he to her? That's what I meant.
I never had to, like, when we were watching this movie so many times, I'm trying to pay attention and somebody asked me a question, including it was mostly our daughter. She would come and watch the movie for us for a little bit and then be like, what's happening? What's going to happen? Where is she going? Or like, we don't know. We're watching this movie too. But I was just like trying to concentrate on the movie and people keep asking me these questions.
Yeah.
But it turns out it was her father, and they embrace, and we know they're good again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you can tell that Danny Glover's, like, his life has gone downhill since she left. But Celie's is just moving up. Her father dies, and he was married to some other woman. Like, he got remarried, and he gave her all of the money, but the house was Celie's because it was her father's.
Yes.
And I maybe the other woman says that that's actually... No, because in the letters, her sister says that that's not her dad.
Yeah.
But they learn about...
But she inherits a house and a store.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently her family had owned some sort of shop or store for a while. And she gets it.
I thought she came up with the store.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Hmm.
But she starts sewing pants. So she's her life is coming up, and you can see that Albert.
Yeah, his farmhouse is in complete disrepair. Mm-hmm. There's animals all over the house, inside and out. Mm-hmm. It's dirty. And he's fallen asleep on the kitchen floor for some reason.
Well, because he was drunk.
Hey, I can get to bed when I'm drunk.
Oh, can you though? Most of the time you just fall asleep on the couch.
Yeah, I do fall asleep on the couch a lot.
But he starts realizing, okay, like the curse she put on me was legit and I need to get this fixed. I need to do right by her. So he goes into his chicken coop and he pulls out a box. And there's a bunch of money in it. And so what I thought was that I'm guessing this is what it was they were trying to get at. But Danny helped pay for Nettie to come back.
Yeah, he from paid Africa. For their visa or something. I don't know. Because he also gets an immigration letter.
Oh.
Yeah, he got a letter out of the mail that said something about immigration.
Oh.
And so he's like, oh, okay, I know how I can set this right. Mm-hmm. Because what he realizes what he really did wrong, because Whoopi Goldberg says it was like, you split me up from my sister.
Yeah.
You split me up from the only person who I ever truly loved.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, okay, I can
do right by her by getting her sister back to her.
And redeem himself a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Because he was such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
We see them, she shows up.
At her house. Yeah. At Celie's house.
And Celie doesn't even know she's going to be there.
No. The women in the front are like, who's coming? Like, do you have anybody planning coming? And Celie goes, no, I don't have any plans for anyone to come here. And then they see like the red and purple, little, I don't know, I guess it's like a shawl, like the fabric.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then they run in the field. Something I noticed also is I wish they could have played a little bit more into it, but like they were purple. I don't understand the title of the book or movie.
Movies, I will say movies like this, where it's just a big chunk of someone's life, they always have trouble coming up with a name for it. So they always just end up making it someone's name, like Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
That's just a movie about the guy's name is Forrest Gump.
Yeah. But, well, what I was trying to get at was that in the beginning of the movie, like, there were these purple flowers. And she gets back to her house, and there's the purple flowers again. And Nettie's wearing purple at the end. And I was thinking, like, is this part of it? Or is it, like, I...
Do you don't remember when she's with Shug and Shug starts saying the something about God and the color purple? If you see the color, you have to stop and look.
Oh, I didn't remember that part.
Okay.
Yeah. I must have missed it.
Yeah. It's sort of, I don't remember it verbatim, but it's like they're walking through a field of purple flowers and Shug is saying like, it's almost as if God created it because you just have to stop and look at it. The color purple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think it's when you're writing a movie, when you're writing a screenplay, you want to start with the same image that you end on.
Yeah.
But it'd be different, right?
Yeah.
To show.
Yeah.
Why do they have that?
Same thing in theater.
Okay. Yeah. So they start out in a field and then at the end. They're reunited. They're older.
In the same field.
Yeah. They're reunited. They're older. And that's what's different. But the field is what's the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You got that.
But what I was going to say was like, I love that they made the field purple.
Yes.
Because it plays into the title. The other thing about it was like, I don't know if they were trying to do it or if it was fully done. But like, it seemed like the happiest moments in her life, there was purple around her. But whenever she was just with Danny Glover, it was very muted tones.
Yeah. Very drab.
And, because I mean, in the beginning, like I'd have to watch it again to see if I could notice it, but I definitely noticed the flowers in the beginning and then the end.
Yeah, it's really hard. This movie is one of those that needs repeat viewing because you can notice more stuff.
Yeah.
But you're so consumed with the tension between the characters. There's a lot of stuff going on around them that you just kind of have to like tune out.
Yeah.
Because you have to focus on what's going on. But I bet you that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That during the happiest moments of her life, there is purple around or more color. Because when she's with Danny Glover, Danny Glover doesn't wear any color. And when she's with him, she also doesn't really wear any color.
Yeah. I want to see like a screenshot or like the scene where she's with Shug in the house, in the bedroom when they're dressing up. Because Shug was wearing red. But like, I wonder if there was purple. Because it was a very brightly colored.
Right.
Because she was having a good time.
Yeah.
I did notice like the colors that the costuming used for.
The costuming in this was really good too. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the costumes a lot.
But like all of it, everything, like even like the photography of the film or videography, I don't know what it's called. like the more vivid moments of her life were the happy moments. And then everything else was very dull and drab, which I thought that was a really good touch.
Yeah. Yeah, I read the book Save the Cat. Mm-hmm. I've been like reading that and going back and revisiting it because I wanted to use it on our show to illustrate how screenplays are written and how movies are made. But the movies we've been doing lately, I just don't line up with it.
Hmm.
They're like, they color outside the lines in these movies and that like movies aren't like big mainstream movie hits are supposed to hit all these buckets of screenwriting and filmmaking. And that's why I've been reading the book. But the last two movies we did were The Color Purple and then Moonlight. And they're very much outside that world. Mm-hmm. They're very artistic and different. So it's like, well, I can't talk about, I want to talk about Save the Cat.
But maybe anyway, on the next one.
That's pretty much the end of the movie. There's a lot we didn't talk about because it's just so long. Mm-hmm. We only have an hour and a half to make this show. And if we've gone scene by scene, it would have been over 2 hours.
Yeah.
And we would be exhausted. So, Aaron, I want to get your no bullshit assessment. What did you think of The Color Purple?
I thought it was a fantastic movie. I would watch this movie again and again. I would watch this over and over again because it's a really beautiful movie. It talks about topics that are tough. Like even when our daughter was watching some of the stuff, like she was asking questions, like when he was about to rape her, she goes, "What is he doing to her?" And so we had to like have that conversation of like, sometimes older people will try to hurt younger people.
Yeah.
And we tried to explain it best we could to a 7-year-old without being like super graphic. We've
had conversations about molestation and sexual assault with her because you have to, and this wasn't the first time we've done that.
Yeah.
But this movie just naturally brings that kind of thing up. Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough movie because it's a tough subject, but it's a beautiful movie. Because it shows like resilience in Black women, because I mean, Black women have done phenomenal things, through so much strife. And I love how, it's a small story.
Yeah.
Like this isn't some like famous person.
No, it's not it's about a, like it's some a regular civil rights activist or
regular
something like that.
Woman who went through something that a lot of women in this time did, and even some women still today. So I think it's a fantastic movie. I would watch it again. I would show it to my grandchildren. It's great.
Yes, this is there is a lot of difficult subject matters in this, but it is such a beautifully made movie.
Mm-hmm.
It looks good. It's acted well. It's directed well. I mean, they got Steven Spielberg to make this.
Yeah.
And he said this was his first serious movie. And then he would go on to do Schindler's List, which is another movie about a really difficult topic.
Which I haven't seen that. I would love to see that.
Yeah, I love that movie. And I've only seen it maybe once or twice. I would love to watch it again. But this is a movie that you can watch over and over again. You'll see new things.
Learn more.
And, yeah, and it's something you should show your kids. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any problem letting my 7-year-old daughter see this, mm-hmm. even though there are difficult topics in it, because I think it's better for her to know this than to not know it.
Yeah. And it opens up the conversation for them to ask.
Yeah.
Not for us to just tell.
Yeah.
Which I think makes them listen a little bit more.
That I really like that you said that, mm-hmm. because when you just cold approach your kid and you say, "Hey, if somebody wants to touch you, don't let them." They don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really uncomfortable for them.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable for me too. But, you know, you watch this movie and they're curious and they're like, what's happening to that person?
Mm-hmm.
And they can see the trauma that it inflicts
leads.
On somebody, you know? So, yeah. Good on you, Color Purple. You're a great movie.
Wonderful movie.
You know, this was nominated for like 6 Oscars and it didn't win a single one.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what it was up against. It must have been a rough, must have been a hard year. Like the mid 80s, a lot of good movies were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. So we got a segment.
Well, hold on. Before you go, I wanted to look at what awards The Color Purple won on Broadway, because it did.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time.
Okay. Well, I mean, there were some spots where we had big chunks. I just wanted to say that it did win.
Some Tonys.
It won Best Musical for the Tony Award in 2006. And it won. Oh, no, it did. It was nominated, but it did win Best Actress in a Musical. So it was nominated for tons, and it actually won at least one Tony, which is nice.
That's good. Okay. So we've got a segment for you. This is recast. And Aaron, I have just been approached by a producer at some production company that made Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to, as dumb as this sounds, they want to do a reboot of Pulp Fiction. Quentin Tarantino classic, Pulp Fiction. They want to reboot this movie. They've hired me to produce it. And I'm hiring you to cast it.
Okay. This is going to be hard. Because the movie was casted so well.
Yes.
But
we're not even, it doesn't even have to be cast well. This is a reboot of a beloved classic mm-hmm. film, and we're going to ruin it by remaking it.
Okay.
Oh my God. Could you imagine the internet hate that you would get for trying to remake
Pulp Fiction? Oh yeah.
All right. So we're going to recast the top six billed actors in Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Starting with John Travolta.
This is a tough one. John Travolta. He looks great. Also, yeah, have you seen this picture?
He looks great with a bald head.
He's been looking pretty good. There was a moment where it was like, ooh, John Travolta. But he's looking a lot better.
Yeah. He's aged pretty well, I gotta say.
There were some moments I was like, but gotten back on.
He looked really bad. Like, he was losing his hair, and he would wear some pretty bad wigs.
Maybe that's why he looked so bad.
And he looked in his movies, and you'd be like, oh my God. But John Travolta is somebody who's had a lot of ups and downs in his career. So who is the ups and down guy of right now? Who's the guy who keeps disappearing and coming back?
Is that what he is in that movie?
No, okay. So famous John Travolta got famous for Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
And then he went on to make Urban Cowboy. He made all these hits in Grease. But Grease, after that, he sort of dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
He really disappeared through the late 80s and early 90s. And then he made Pulp Fiction, and everybody's like, John Travolta fucking kicks ass. And he started making, he was in Face Off and Broken Arrow after that. He got all these movies because Quentin Tarantino was like, I like them.
Oh. Well.
So who needs a new comeback vehicle?
God, I hate this because I don't know actors' names.
That's why this is fun to do, is because you don't know actors.
Literally the first thing that came to my head.
Oh my God, you gotta say
it. It was Danny DeVito. Isn't he the really short guy?
Yes, he's the short guy.
Oh my God.
But that he does need, because I mean,
he's like a comedic relief.
But somewhat. he was another guy who was like huge in the 80s. He was like starring in movies like Twins and stuff like that in the 80s.
Yeah, I don't know why
So he does need to come back.
Okay. Well, I don't know why, but he came up into my head. I just think it would be hilarious to see him do that dance scene.
Oh my God.
Because I don't know. He's not a dancer.
No.
Yeah.
And also him be like 2 feet shorter than the woman that he's dancing with. That would be crazy. Oh my God. Okay. So the next person we're going to recast is Samuel L. Jackson.
Okay.
Samuel L. Jackson's very famous.
Who was that guy that was in that Star Wars movie that was one of the stormtroopers?
Oh, John Boyega?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great one. And he's British too.
Yeah, I think it could be cool to see him play that role, because like he was a comedic relief in that movie.
Well, yeah, somewhat. I mean he was the B story, but yeah, he had comedy moments.
Yeah, but I think that would be interesting to see him like play that, especially versus Danny DeVito trying to play the straight kind of character. I think it could be interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
He's a lot younger.
Yeah, he's a lot younger. But Samuel L. Jackson was pretty young when this movie came out. Man,
I'm saying he's a lot younger than Danny DeVito.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of interesting to see like Danny DeVito being this like goofy guy, and
Danny DeVito, he can do drama.
No, what I'm saying is, it would be funny to see this old Danny DeVito guy playing opposed to this really young guy who's supposed to be like,
okay.
Because I mean, John Travolta's not the main, like he's not the head guy with this group, is he?
No, I mean they're
Samuel
partners.
Jackson's more ahead of.
Well, I would say Samuel L. Jackson's kind of like the dominant guy of the two, but they're like co-workers. One's not really ahead of the other, you know. They're They're essentially henchmen.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be interesting. And he's British, so he could do his British accent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Finn was my favorite character in the new Star Wars.
He was fun.
Yeah. Okay, so next we have Uma Thurman.
I might get some hate for this, but J-Law.
Have Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah, have you heard the drama around her?
No.
Something about Miley Cyrus and...
Oh, God.
some stuff like that. But I could see her playing Uma Thurman's part, especially from... What was that movie that she was in? She did that dancing stuff?
Silver Linings Playbook?
Yeah, I think... See, from seeing her in that, I could see her play Uma Thurman's that character.
Yeah, I definitely think she could pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's just good casting.
Thank you.
Okay, so next we have Bruce Willis.
Who was he in this? He was
Uma's the boxer.
Mia's husband, right?
No, that was blanking on his name now. We have the meats. Ving Rhames. But Bruce Willis was a boxer, and he was supposed to throw a fight for Ving Rhames. But Bruce Willis's girlfriend is like a Latino woman or something. I don't see her on here. But anyway, he plays a boxer in the movie.
I don't really remember it. Maybe what's the... Al Pacino. It would be funny to see him as a boxer.
Also another famously short man. Hey, I'm Pacino. Okay. Then let's recast Tim Roth.
I don't remember who he was in the movie.
He was the guy trying to rob the store in the beginning. He and his girlfriend.
Oh.
Be cool, honey bunny. He was Abomination in She-Hulk, that show we just watched.
Yeah, he was. I know you're talking about. I'm just trying to think of somebody. What was that guy? Who was that Spider-Man character? What's his name?
The newest one?
Yeah.
Oh God, I can't remember his name now.
His girlfriend's
Zendaya. But I can't remember his name. Why am I? I'm drawing a blank.
Matthew? Sure. No. Tom Holland.
Tom Holland. You want to see Tom Holland?
Yeah, I could see him as like the. I don't know.
And then you want to make his girlfriend Zendaya too?
Yeah. Yeah. She could definitely play, like, I think she would play that better than him. Pumpkin Poop could be a girl, right?
Oh, but Amanda Plummer she has such a specific style.
Who's Amanda Plummer?
She's the one who played the girlfriend. That's her.
Oh.
But she always plays, like, crazy characters. She's really good.
Okay. I don't really remember those characters that much.
Anyway, Zendaya can do it.
She could do anything.
Okay, so we've recast this movie. It's been out for a year. It has a 2.1 on Rotten Tomatoes, and we're never going to work again in Hollywood. So,
hooray!
All right, that's been this episode. What are we going to watch next episode?
Oh, the next episode we are watching is Eternal Sunshine. Also, just a note. Sorry, we did not post last week. This movie was supposed to post it last Wednesday. but life has gotten in the way. So we are, instead of doing every other week for this next two episodes, this week is going to be Color Purple. Next week, we are going to be doing Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, our lives have been pretty crazy for a couple weeks now. Nothing bad. It's been all good stuff.
Yeah, just a lot of stuff's happened.
We're doing fine, but our house hasn't been clean for like 2 weeks.
Oh my God. I had a birthday party, and then we got a truck, and then we got all kind, like we sold our car. It's been a lot. And I've been like, we changed our show. We were going to do one show. We were going to do Romeo and Juliet, but we changed it. So now we're doing something else.
Yeah.
And that was stressful. So we've been a little preoccupied.
Yeah. So next week, 7 days from today, we will be talking about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, because that was going to be our romance, you know, Valentine's Day movie. And you can write into the show and tell us whatever you want to tell us. Talk about a movie. Talk about all the dumb stuff we said. How many times I messed my words up. If you want, at joeyandaaronpod@gmail.com.
Woo!
And that's going to do it for us. This has been
You Haven't Seen It?